suddenly kicked in.
Yeah, don't care for it at all.
No, Britain, they just suddenly turn summer on.
It's no good.
Yeah. The thing about being Australian is you're used to heat, but you're not genetically adapted to it.
No, exactly.
You're just like, used to just being again. Unpleasant.
Yeah. And also not used to it being in, just these houses, these buildings that are really not used to it.
Yeah, God, no, it's really not. It's really that's what's great about this studio. Is there's a dank basement.
Yeah.
Even in summer, it's like sort of pleasantly cool.
Yeah, it's nice in here.
Yeah, gonna start living in this recording studio just during the summer months. My house is black.
Yeah.
So that really adds.
What?
It has tiny, because it's a barn.
Right.
So it's like it has like tiny windows, apart from one set of massive windows, but that don't open. So they function as like a huge greenhouse into like the atrium of the house.
Yeah.
And then every room that has windows that do open, the windows are tiny because like the planning permission is such that you can only have small windows that don't like obstruct the facade of the.
Yeah.
And then the outside of it's painted black. It is like the most perfect sauna.
Yeah.
It's cold in the winter because it's got high ceilings, and then it's like ludicrously hot in the summer. Great choice.
Perfect.
Yeah. It's like really ideal.
Do you have air conditioning?
No. I do actually have it because my mum was like real bad with the heat, so my sister bought like a portable air conditioner.
Yeah.
Which you can turn on if you're okay with going, what?
Right.
Yeah. You can have it on for like half an hour just to like take the edge off.
Yeah.
But then after that, you're like, I think I might go deaf. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. In Britain, you get real guilt about air conditioning.
Why is that?
I don't know, because no one has it. It feels like such a luxury. Oh, what am I, some kind of yank using air conditioning?
What's the tipping point for this country and finally installing one air conditioning unit in a single building?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I would say offices and stuff typically have them.
Mm.
Some don't, but generally speaking, if you're in an office of any kind of decent size, it will be air conditioned.
Yeah.
And like most like shops and stuff, again, any shop of it, like a supermarket will be air conditioned or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, yeah, I don't know. I think there's a certain, the thing that's valorized most in Britain as a concept is putting up with things being shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're saying, this guy's got an air conditioner. Look at him. What do you think he is? Fucking from California? What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, you can't put up with a little heat. Yeah, because there's also that type of British person who loves being too hot.
Yeah.
They rejoice in, like, being bright red.
Yeah.
Lying out in it.
Yeah. Very particular holiday type.
Yeah.
Not even on holiday. It's just, like,
oh yeah,
in the street.
Yeah, like, when you do see one of those, like, Ryanair flights coming back from Tenerife or something, and it's just, like, a bald head that's, like, completely red and flaking from the sun, and you're like, whoa.
Golly.
Yeah, the Brits are in town, baby.
They're back.
They've been doing it. Yeah, we are a nation that does not fear skin cancer, I have to say.
No. Yeah.
We love
all for it.
Yeah. get me puce.
As soon as the sun comes out for a single day, it's like, I'm going to sit in it.
Yeah. Like a
no
lizard.
No protection, sitting in it. Let's crisp up and then be fine.
We're trying to like save it up for the rest of the year, like store it for slow release.
Yeah. I got a mole check recently.
Oh, okay.
Got told by, in this country, mm-hmm. Got told by the person who did the check, the least number of moles she's seen on an Australian.
Wow.
And I'm like, I avoid the sun.
Which for a British doctor is, how many Australians is she?
No, I mean, that's a good question. Maybe it could be three.
Yeah. She was honestly kind of like, one guy came in, but he really had a mole issue.
He had a big problem.
He had whole warrens under there. It was all going on. So many moles, I'm legally blind.
That's good stuff. That's woodland comedy.
Yeah, for the forest animals. Yeah, I'm doing woodland
That's
laughs.
That's Toad in Toad Hall comedy, you know?
Yeah, I was doing set of laughs at the weekend. Badger-themed comedy night.
Yeah.
For all the nocturnal mustelids there in there watching my set.
Mustelids.
Yeah. You know, farmers, they want to kill you because you've got TB. I've not even got TB.
We've not Is that all true? Got it. The badgers?
Yeah, apparently the badgers are like a big carrier for like bovine TB.
Right.
Or like whatever the TB that cows get is like the same as the TB that badgers can get.
Yeah.
But it kills cows, but not really badgers.
Yeah.
And so the badgers are just going around with TB and then they give it to the cows. And so the farmers are always like, we have to murder every badger.
Yeah.
And it's this like back and forth between like farmers and environmentalists because the farmers are always trying to like, they're using like crazy shit. One of my friend's dads is an agricultural lawyer, and he once had to confiscate a bunch of Zyklon B off of a farmer that he'd been using. So it's like, where did you get the fucking Nazi gas from? Like, what? How? like, yeah, farmers are up to stuff.
Yeah,
of course. But then I don't know who's right. There's a lot of arguments about that.
I'm on the side of the badgers.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they pay. Yeah.
Yeah, having grown up with more TV shows starring badgers than farmers. Or at least English farmers.
Yeah, well, the farmers don't equip themselves very well in Alan Partridge. So.
Yeah, I mean, villains.
Yeah, absolutely. They're trying to tear Alan down.
Our Alan.
Our Alan. And that is the last thing we want. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to do a woodland comedy gig. I reckon that could be.
Inside like a hollowed out oak?
Yeah, that feels like it would be the right place for a woodland comedy gig. Yeah, a little arrangement of different creatures.
Everybody on little toadstools.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting there enjoying the show.
Yeah,
that'd or be not nice. Enjoying the show.
Yeah.
That's even funnier. Doing a gig for woodland creatures and they hate it.
A stag do of fucking dormice.
Yeah, can't like, get a weasel shit. In. We had a weasel here last week and he was great. Get off, humans.
He did some great gear.
Yeah.
Great stuff about being long and thin.
He is long.
Came on stage and he was like, no, what you're thinking? That pipe cleaner's let himself go.
That's good. That's good weasel gear.
Yeah, great weasel gear.
Yeah.
People are always. People don't trust me because I'm a weasel.
Yeah. No, you're thinking I'm a stout. No, I'm a weasel.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Good guess.
Got here just about. Had another gig. Had to stoke my way out of that one. There you go. Bit of misdirect. That's probably a bit advanced for the weasel comedian.
He's good. That weasel is good.
Oh, he is good. But yeah, I think we could entertain some weasels. Or be entertained by a weasel.
Be entertained by a weasel. It's hosted by a hedgehog, little hat,
yeah.
Then a weasel opening. A weasel doing 15 at the top. You come on the headline.
Yeah. There's a deer doing clown.
Yeah.
The deer's from like a very posh family and went abroad to learn how to clown. They've been to like one of those like French forests in like Alsace.
Yeah.
And they've come back with a very pretentious conception of how to do a comedy night.
And it is similar sort of stuff to like Bambi when Bambi's trying on the ice and slipping and sliding, but this is deliberate because they're clowning.
They're
falling all over the place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They've got a bunch of props like traffic cones, googly eyes, you know.
Yeah, they're getting all in the crowd. Everyone hates it.
Oh, yeah. They can't really play clubs, but they've got a good agent, so they're...
They keep getting booked.
Yeah, they're constantly being shoved on. Yeah. You thought the woodland gig was tough. I did Brighton Comedia last night.
Tell you what, that deer died.
Oh, yeah, brutal. It was like Bambi.
Yeah, Bambi's mum.
Oh, yeah, Bambi's mum. Yeah, Bambi survived, famously. Yeah.
Bambi's mum died.
That's Bambi's...
At Comedia in Brighton. That's why it's so upsetting. You thought it was upset that when she got shot by a hunter. Imagine watching a bomb for 20 minutes doing clown.
I'd have shot it myself. Yeah. It was actually a very dissatisfied punter, that guy.
Yeah.
It wasn't even really a hunter. He was just...
Yeah, the shot rang out after the gig. Yep.
Yeah. That would be fun as a comedian, just to go out like JFK. Just like, you know, what a way. Like really, really topping Tommy Cooper.
Yeah. All the acts that do die on stage, very few of them are being assassinated.
Yeah.
That's the next one. That's the next step up.
Maybe for a clown, people would think it was part of the act. They're like, wow, that was incredible.
When Tommy Cooper died on stage, heart attack, I assume, was it?
I believe so, yeah.
Mm, right.
Yeah, and people did think it was part of the act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Laughing, just how he would have wanted to go.
Yeah, I always love that because, like, maybe that is true, but maybe it was like, somebody help me. Like, the man could have survived. If only he'd been given medical attention, but they were like, nah, he's killing. Leave him to it. He's killing and dying at the same time.
It's a good bit.
The first man ever to do it.
It's a tough bit to pull off, but he did it.
Yeah. Well, imagine alighting on that good of a bit right as you're like, damn.
Yeah.
I'll never get to do this again.
Yeah.
Hope someone's taping this. Once and clip this up.
Clip it. That's so funny. Yeah, he's up in heaven. It's like, did you film it? We've got to put it out on socials.
Yeah, that's the thing. You see all these comics, the open spots now, they're all, you know, setting up their phone at the back of the room and then they're on stage trying to induce a heart attack just to get a few views on the TikTok, on the Instagram. You know, they don't know the craft.
Yeah, that's the ultimate viral clip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We used to smoke and eat burgers for years and wait for the heart attack to occur naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good old days.
Yeah. Traditional style.
But look, we're not going to have a heart attack in the middle of this episode, God willing.
God willing.
Yeah. We're here to do something quite different, which is talk about season one, episode six of I'm Alan Partridge, oh, yeah. Towering Alan.
Towering Alan. Towering Alan.
Yeah. And they didn't even try and go for, like, the Towering Alferno or something. No, just fully... I respect this. I don't even know, because some of them, they feel like there is kind of a link between the title and the...
Yes.
But this feels as though I can't really see the Towering Inferno. Ironically, there is an Alan Partridge episode in season two where Towering Inferno, I think, would be inappropriate.
Yeah, right. Is it the Towering Inferno or is it Towering Inferno? I thought it was the Towering Inferno. And is this episode just called Towering Alan? In which case, it's not a parody of a title at all.
Let me see here. Yeah, it is the Towering Inferno. Yeah, which is what I would have thought as well. Yeah, Steve McQueen and Paul Newman.
And so they've just gone with Towering Alan.
Yeah, and Fred Astaire, isn't it?
Fred Astaire's in the tower. I've got to watch it. I'm saying.
Dancing down the tower, like, it's on fire.
That's great. I feel like my favorite genre of film I've never seen any of, 70s disaster films with a big ensemble cast. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Because also Fred Astaire must have been pretty old by then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dragging out whoever they can at this point.
The concept is a building's on fire.
Yeah, building's on fire. Boat is upside down. There's an earthquake. Earthquake is the worst one disaster film wise, where it's just kind of like, that sort of just happens once.
Yeah, you kind of,
like, it's either the build up to it, it happens, and then you kind of have to recover from it. Or my favorite series, The Airports. Have you seen any of these?
No.
Airport.
Okay.
Airport 77. Airport Concorde.
Is that where Concorde blows up on the runway?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know when it
that really
up.
Happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's when it all ended, right? It was all over for Concorde at that one?
I think
was
so,
the
yeah.
Crash?
Yeah. Yeah, was there a crash? There was definitely one where it kind of caught fire when it was taking off, I think.
Yeah, something bad happened to one and they were like, maybe we don't need to go this fast. Maybe travel doesn't need to happen this quickly.
Yeah, yeah, it was kind of sick though. I mean, you know, look. I mean, we did have to get involved with the French and that's probably why it caught fire, but...
Hey.
Yeah, the guy was on his tea break, the anti-fire guy. It's the unions over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. My favorite, I think, weird disaster movie is Volcano.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
Yeah, I have this memory of them, like, spraying water from fire hoses onto lava to make it solidify and stop. And that's, like, their big plan.
Yeah.
To resolve the volcano issue.
Yeah, that's a great one.
But, yeah, at least with, like, a building on fire, there's, like, well, there's something we can do about that. But, yeah, like, kind of the earthquake and volcano are both quite, like, evacuate, I guess.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is a lot of evacuation, and someone who hasn't evacuated having to go back and get that person who hasn't evacuated yet.
Yeah,
it's a lot of the plots for those.
One guy's like, I'm not leaving behind my commemorative coins.
Yeah.
I'll die with these coins. You gotta come with us.
The coins start melting. No,
yeah,
this is all I have. Yeah,
we got obsessed with a while on this YouTube stream that I used to do of this guy who was trying to pay for stuff with commemorative coins.
Really?
Because he had some wheeze where, like, he realized that people would buy these commemorative coins for, like, you know, what, you know, it'd be like a commemorative £5 coin from the Royal Mint, and you pay, like, £7 for it. And then, you know, someone's grandfather bought it out of the newspaper, and then, like, the grandkids would be like, oh, I'm just going to fucking sell this shit. It's like bollocks. It's like, you know, the Princess Diana death memorial coin or whatever. And then, so they're selling them for less than they're worth. And so, but he was like, but actually, technically, these are, like, legal tender. And so he was like buying up loads of these coins on eBay for like less than their face value and then just trying to use them, but then like nowhere would take them. And he kept trying to use them at petrol stations because essentially the way the concept of legal tender works in the UK is the only way you can actually make someone take cash is in payment of a debt. So, for example, it doesn't really apply in a shop because they can just be like, well, I won't take it, but I won't give you the stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas like in like petrol where you've already put it in your car or like in a restaurant where you've already eaten.
Yeah.
They can like if you give them like say like a Scottish note and they don't want to take it, like they have to take it because like there's no you owe them money and you're offering them like a legitimate form of payment. It's something like that. And so, yeah, he kept going to petrol stations, filling up his car and then trying to pay with like 50 Princess Diana memorial coins. And they're like, we're not taking this. It's not real money. And he'd be like, it is. And he's like showing them stuff online. And they're like calling the police And he, you know, he has a voice like that. Yeah, I think you'll find actually it's Lady Lieutenant. And then just, and it'll be like the same cops every time, and they're like, Gary, why are you doing this? Just please, just start. So
would he ever get a, what, like? Would they ever accept it?
I think sometimes, because it was, it's kind of like a gray area, basically, where like I think sometimes they would like refuse to take it, and the police will just be like, well, he is trying to pay you, so we can't arrest him, but you'll have to issue him with like basically an invoice that he'll then have to pay within 30 days or something like that, because he would deliberately go with no other, like no cards, no other cash. Yeah. Fascinating type of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, so shouts out to that guy if he's listening.
Yeah. You should do what I do with the Scottish notes. Just put them in the ticket machine at the train station.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
It's the only way to get rid of them.
I get away with it, you know.
Really?
If you just assertively say, oh, it's Scottish money, just like I go to Edinburgh a lot, it's like, it's yeah. Really, you Google it. Just be like, Google
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I go, yeah, path of least resistance is I'm putting them in a machine at a supermarket, or I'm putting them in the
yeah, that
topping one. Up an Oyster card.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think generally, if you're giving them over the till at a big shop, they'll take them. Because I think the cashiers are like trained. Because they're like, you're going to handle so much cash. You're going to see this.
Yeah.
But occasionally, yeah.
They just go. They do it. They even do it with like, you ever had a 50? Try to get rid of a 50?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. People hate those.
People don't want them.
No.
I'm like, but they're real.
Yeah. They're also, they're massive. Though, they're like, so they don't fit in your wallet.
No.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's like an A4 piece of paper, like a novelty check.
Where's anyone even get a 50 from? You get paid in a 50 for doing a gig. Paid with some,
yeah.
And then you're like, great. Thanks. Now I'll just have this.
It's insane. Sometimes you'll get like 100 quid out of a cash point and they'll give you 250s and you're like, oh, fuck you. Fuck you. Yeah. I actually never get 100 quid out of a cash point almost exactly for that reason. I'll be like, £90, please. Let's see you fuck me on this one. Yeah. I hate even getting all 20s.
Yeah.
You want a versatile.
You wouldn't just switch to 10s.
Yeah. Yeah, tens that would good. Be better. But yeah, it's getting rid of a 50 is tough. Scottish money, it can be tricky. Yeah,
be tricky.
I'm trying to think, what is the time? Recently, actually, I got my car washed, and I have loads of Scottish cash all the time because it's the only time I earn cash is in Edinburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got my car washed as like some Romanian guys, and then I gave him a Scottish 20, and then the guy was like chasing after me, and he was like, no, and then his boss caught him, and he was like, no, it's okay. I was like, this guy, he's done it before. I was like, I was kind of concerned I was going to have to be like, not really an argument, but just like a long explanation, because that was genuinely the only cash I had.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, he knew. I was actually quite surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was familiar.
Yeah, that happened to me when I got back. I was in a Wetherspoons when I first moved over here.
Right, yeah. But you're soaking up the culture. You're trying to blend in. Yeah, I get it. You
know. Celebrating the arrival. And then tried to pay it with some Scottish notes, and the girl was like, this isn't real. And then a boss is like, yes, it is. Which I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
That's like, awesome.
The idea that anyone would do make fake, like an entirely new fake currency and try to pay with that rather than a duplicate of what already exists.
Yeah, I'm trying to play in Pete Bucks at Weatherspoons.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm using whatever Scotia Bank is. Yeah. Is that one of them, the ones you can get up there? Where
I
is
think
that?
Scotia Bank is a Canadian one. I think it's Nova Scotia. Clydesdale Bank is one of them.
Clydesdale Bank's the one I'm thinking
Bank
of.
Bank of Scotland. I think those are the two that issue notes.
Where's that one?
I think that's in Glasgow, and Bank of Scotland's in Edinburgh.
Yeah,
I think that was kind of there. Like, look, we got to give both cities, the both major cities, a right to acknowledge. I just realized I said both cities there. I was like, that's dangerous. Let's clarify both major cities a right to issue banknotes. You know, the Glasgow-Edinburgh rivalry runs strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Northern Irish banknotes can be hard to get rid of because people are really like, what is this?
I don't think I've seen one of those.
Yeah, yeah. You get like an Ulster Bank note or whatever. Yeah. I think until recently they had £1 notes in Northern Ireland.
Really?
I mean, I think like not that recently, but like more recently than you would think. I think like, you know, in the last like 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Wales got one?
No. Everything, Wales, they just get our stuff. There's not enough of them.
5% of Joneses. Okay. Did you know that?
Yeah, there's a lot of Joneses.
A lot of Joneses.
A lot of Joneses. You got Welsh roots?
No, actually.
Yeah, actually, Tom Jones is my dad.
Yeah, no, yeah. Sadly, no. Scottish, Northern.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess Jones gets everywhere.
It's getting around.
I mean, Edwards is Welsh too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also don't know of any Welsh. I mean, it must have Welsh roots somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
But it's far enough back that no one knows.
No.
No one cares to trace it back.
Yeah.
Anyway,
this is Armalodontia.
We open with a radio scene, as we so often do. Alan is he's going in hard on Dave Clifton this time. He's taking the piss out of Dave Clifton for saying a D sound instead of a T sound in the middle of a word, and saying it's not correct broadcast English, and he's saying it's the work of a dosser, a dosser and a dwad. He's having fun there. I heard you're back on the bottle. That feels like Alan's feeling himself, you know.
He's
getting his own back.
This is where he's most his true self.
Yeah,
he's razzing him, his rival.
Yeah, I do have a. I think it's probably like a divisive thing, but I have a certain respect for vindictiveness.
Yeah,
I think sometimes, you know, you see when you watch this whole series and like Dave Clifton's like he's having a pop at Alan in there, and then Alan's like, no, now I'm going to turn the screw.
Yeah,
I'm here. We've already have read the small pill on your cone track. Now I'm going to dial it up.
Yeah, he especially cops it from so many people that it is fun. The one who is the closest to him in status is the one who he just. Who is also a radio DJ. He's like, this is who I'm going to tear into. This idiot. Myself.
He is kind of like, he's kind of like a low status Larry David.
Yeah.
He has that similar thing where he's like, he's often right, but in a kind of like, but he's also the asshole.
Yeah.
But except he comes at it from the position of being a loser and Larry David comes at it from the perspective of being like incredibly successful. And that's why people resent him.
Yeah.
People resent Alan Partridge just for the person that he is. Yeah. And so then we get that. We get him back at the, on the way back to the hotel, he buys himself a Bang & Olufsen stereo system.
Yep.
Yeah. He's gotten into the idea of music now. Wait, hang on. I've got this in the right order. No, does
no
it go
he
back
buys
to the
that after.
After the funeral.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So he goes back to the hotel and then he takes a call. He meets Lynn.
Yeah. But he bumps into Kevin Eldon in the hallway.
Yes.
For the first time.
Yeah, so Kevin Eldon is guest star in this episode.
Yeah.
And he's a guest who doesn't really say anything, apart from one line at the end. He just laughs to himself.
This great character, this.
Yeah.
I was like, it's note perfect for this guy. Like, I'm like, I've been this guy. I've met this guy.
Yeah.
Just like in the elevator. Going up.
It's painfully well observed.
I saw Kevin Eldon in a pub.
Oh, okay.
Like, maybe like 8 months ago. He was having a drink with Stuart Lee.
Oh, wow.
And we're just there.
That's an interesting combo.
Yeah. I was like, from Big Train.
Yeah.
There he is.
He's always, Kevin Eldon, I feel like, is Kevin Eldon in every show. There's like I don't know if this is what he's like in real life, but I feel like he only ever plays like a kind of unsettling freak. Like, that's his...
Yeah.
That's his energy. Yeah. Kevin Eldon, if you're listening, I'm not saying you're an unsettling freak.
No, of course not.
But that is the oeuvre of your work. It's largely unsettling freaks.
Yeah.
Mm.
But so I was like, oh, that's pretty fun. There he is.
Yeah.
Guy from television.
Yeah. I like Stuart Lee's work, but I feel like I wouldn't enjoy having a drink with him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You think he'd go all meta on you?
Well, he'd be like doing the character.
Yeah, break down the idea of even having a drink.
Yeah. He's doing like bits to camera that aren't there. Turning away from
starts
me.
Starts running around the pub, just having a drink.
Yeah. I'm like, did you want port scratchings? And he's like, well, why do you need to introduce that into the? Why would that? We were going fine with this beers, and then now you're introducing another element unnecessarily.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like. I don't know. I don't get the vibe that he's someone who'd be easy to talk to. That's my...
Yeah.
And I respect his output.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Only one way to find out. Call him up.
Yeah, that's right.
Get him on the pod.
Yeah. Is it easy to call up Kevin Eldon?
Yeah.
Give him that Eldon ring.
I know where he is. I know where he drinks.
We're tracking him down.
We're tracking him down.
Well, this is now the podcast where we dox Kevin Eldon. we've got that guy from Twitter who's really good at GeoGuessr to triangulate exactly where Kevin Eldon lives.
Yeah. It was upstairs at an open mic too, which I thought was very strange.
Oh, that's a dangerous place for Stuart Lee to be, especially.
Lee, yeah. Tough.
I hate hanging out anywhere where I might conceivably be recognized.
Yeah.
Which for me is not many places. It's like It's like near
your own house.
Well, yeah, that, yeah. Can't get away from the wife. She's always recognizing me, asking me to sign stuff, divorce papers.
Gotta get out of here.
Yeah, tricked into signing divorce papers because you think it's an autograph. Perfect. Yeah, no, I mean, it's the Doug Stanhope thing about famous within 200 meters of the show.
Yes, yes.
That's me. Famous within 200 meters of the show. Yeah, yeah. And then so sometimes like friends will come and they'll be like, "Oh, should we get a drink at the bar?" I'm like, "Not this bar."
No, not this bar.
A different bar.
Yeah.
Like to, is there something worse about being recognized at the show?
Yeah.
I don't, if you get recognized, as happens very rarely, but occasionally, like someone in a shop just comes at you and they're like, "Oh, hey man, I love your stuff." It's always, that's where it ends. But if someone's been to the show.
Yeah, just then.
That can really drag on.
Yeah.
And then if they're staying there for a drink, you're staying there for a drink. Ooh. That's, and it's unkind on both parties.
Yeah. Nobody wants it.
No,
they don't. They actually don't want. Nobody wants that. I feel like, yeah, that is worse than like the tube station. I've had that where it's just like, ooh, you were on the show we were just at, and like, yeah, well, see ya. We just got to both be on this escalator for a little bit, then I guess.
They're turning to face you on the escalator.
They don't know. Hey, so how is you gig a lot? Where do you normally perform? I'm like, oh, come on, I'll take the lift. Actually, you walk back up the down escalator,
sprinting just to get out of there, just to try and make some headway.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, that is rough. I did once have, it's happened to me a few times, both here and in Russia, where people will come up to you. And they say hi, and then they want you to start the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, no, I'll talk to you, but that's not how it works. You have to have prepared something that you want to say. I don't have anything to say to you. I will respond to stimulus, but yeah. I don't have small talk prepared for you. I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And then I think I more or less said this to someone once, like politely. I was just like, no, you have to say something. And then he was so... My girlfriend was like, I couldn't handle it. I felt so bad for him. And I was like, I was trying to be nice, but I was just like, but you're gonna have to say something. Like, I'm willing to help you out here a bit, but I can't lead this.
The best I had was I sometimes still do the bit, but I have a bit about how I bumped into a friend on the train platform, mm-hmm. and she said, I get on the train over there, and she just walked away. And I'm like, I wish I could do that. I want to do that. I want to do that all the time. I wish I could do that with interactions. Mm-hmm. And then after that show, I was on a train platform and this couple came over and they were like, oh, you were at the show. That was great. I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks so much. Oh, you saw the bit. I'm going to go over there. And I just walked away. I walked off down the train platform. I'm like, you've seen the bit.
I'm going to go over there.
And I walked away. I'm like, thank you so much, but I'm going to get on the, I'm not getting on the same bit of the train as you. I'm going to go.
That's smart.
To another bit of the train. So, you just got to put it out there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's a kind of antipodean confidence, which I envy, actually. That's I feel very trapped. And then conversely, sometimes I would say most of these interactions you have are actually quite pleasant.
Yes.
And they're like, people are being nice and it's nice and it's like, oh, that's nice. They enjoyed the thing and they had the correct understanding of boundary setting to be like, I enjoyed it. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
They don't want to talk to you. They just want to tell you, thank you.
And that's great. And that's always very nice. Yeah. And very occasionally I'll have one of those where I'm like, oh, I didn't handle that very well. I had one, this was quite recently. I was at Fleet Services. I mean, joyous place.
Yeah.
And I was so hungover and I was like halfway through like a 7-hour drive and I was just in WH Smith, just staring at the chocolate bars, deciding which one of these little bastards was going to get me through the next 3 hours of driving. And then a guy like came up behind me, not in like a weird way, but just that was the only direction you could approach from because of where I was standing. And I kind of tapped me on the shoulder and he was like, hey man, love your stuff. Listening to you in the car right now. And I just kind of like, I looked at him like I was being arrested. I was just like, so, and I was like, oh yeah, thanks man. In a way that, and then I was like, oh, was that, maybe that seemed rude, but I was just so like, I was starstruck by him. I was like, I couldn't comprehend what was happening. I was so like,
Yeah,
the service station, a liminal space.
Yeah, it's like, especially when it's just like, you're not expecting it. At least post your show, you'd be like, oh, this could happen.
Yeah. You're on guard.
Yeah. You know,
you're there. You've got the pen out.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I keep remembering what I was like. Once a guy in the smoking area of a nightclub, this was years ago, I'd been recognized a couple of times. And then this guy, he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, oi, mate. And I turned around fully like ready to be like, yeah, it is me. And then he was like, a bird shat down the back of my clothes. It was honestly perfect. It was like, what a beautiful monument to hubris that was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Great stuff. But yeah, not Alan Partridge is not getting recognized in this episode.
No.
Yeah, so yeah, where did we get to?
So he sees Kevin Eldon in the hallway, and then he gets a phone call from Sue Cook.
Ah, yes. This is great, where he's like, I was watching this with my girlfriend, and I was like, oh, Sue Cook is a real person. And she was like, what? And he goes, take the fag out of your mouth, Sue, I can't understand what you're saying. That to be possibly the funniest line in the episode, which is just taking like a real person and just like portraying them as this just like completely trash, but like a very like prim and proper BBC TV yeah. personality. And then at the end of the conversation, he goes, right, you can puff away now, Sue. And she informs him that Tony Hares has died.
Yes.
He fell off the roof of his house trying to get the aerial down and broke his neck. And then Alan is kind of, he's taking the phone away and like, I'm like, yes. And then going, I'm very sad to hear that. He's celebrating with Lynn. He's like, who is the new head of programs? Oh, Chris Fairbank. Yeah, that's good. That's good for me. So he's like, he arranges to go to the funeral.
Yep.
We get like a brief scene with him and Lynn after the phone call, but like before the funeral, we're going to see him and then in the room.
Because he wants to move out. He's actually sick of being in the, is this at this point where he's sick of being in the place? Where he does the counting, like he has all the body washes.
Yeah, he's like tipping him out on the bed. Yep. He's like, I've got to leave. And she's like, I've been doing some tidying up. And he's like, and then she goes, not in that drawer. He's like, good, good. Very good. Then he heads off to the funeral. This is where we get one of my favorite sight gangs in the show, as mentioned previously. He's chatting to Chris Feather. He's wearing his black bomber jacket. Turns around. Cashel GTX.
Yep.
Yeah. He goes over. He's rude to the widow.
And how do you know him?
Yeah. Were you close?
Were you close?
What was he doing up on the roof? This boy's getting the aerial down. He's like, oh, did he bring it down with him when he fell? She's like, yes. It's like, well, it's good to know that his last act was an act of kindness. Then he gets a call from Curry's.
Yeah.
He just takes it just like in the funeral. Yeah. Ideal stuff.
Yeah.
And then eventually he gets Chris Feather to agree to a meeting at the BBC, but not before he has to talk to the BBC current affairs guy who has bored him.
Yeah.
So Chris Feather says, this is, he's just revamped our news and current affairs. And Alan just shrugs. Also a beautiful little gag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it on when he's on the phone to Curry's where he says, oh, sorry, I was just talking to a widow.
I also like that he leaves before the funeral. Mm. He's just like, he's got what he wants. They're all going in. He's like, great, I'm off. Just leaves.
That's all he needed. He doesn't need to stay for the funeral. Yeah.
What's the new guy's name? The new head of?
Chris Feather.
Chris Feather, yep.
Great name.
Yeah, I love that there's nothing that Alan can do that will stop him from liking Alan.
Yeah. Sort of a simple soul.
Someone else would be like, I don't like that he left the funeral.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a good guy.
Not Chris Feather.
Not Chris Feather, no. Feather also one of those beautiful surnames where like you never meet anyone called Feather, but as soon as you do, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You're never like, that's a weird name. You're like, yeah, that's the kind of name a British person would have.
Yeah.
It's like one in a million British people, but you're still like,
Feather.
That's plausible head of programs name.
Yeah.
There's also that funny bit when he's on the phone where he's talking about Tony Hares and then Lynn says, the devil takes many forms.
Yeah.
And then he goes, sorry, Lynn, she's a bit of a Baptist, you know.
Yeah.
And then who is it? Someone apologizes for swearing.
Who is that?
I watched this like literally 2 hours ago. And I'm having a stroke here.
Because there's also the bit where he says to the woman at the hotel where he talks about like, what if I was a younger, better looking man?
Oh, yeah, Susan, yeah.
Yeah, Susan.
Yeah, I need to build that time travel gymnasium.
Yeah.
He's like, you'd shag me then. Maybe, Alan.
To leave the desk unattended.
Yeah. I like the idea of just like fiddling with the sliders, you know, like just being there and just being like, okay, well, imagine I was a different person. Would you shag me then?
Yeah.
Presenting this woman with hypothetical scenarios. Like, I just want to know where the line is.
Yeah.
To see if I've got any chance.
Does any version of me in any universe have any chance?
Maybe. Everything everywhere all at once, but it's just Alan Partridge trying to shag Susan, the receptionist, in every... Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, credit to Alan. He's not going for Sophie. He's going for Susan. You know, he wants an age-appropriate queen. That's what he's after.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah. Then he gets back from the funeral. He brings in this Bang & Olufsen stereo system. And then we get another, this is another one of the real iconic Partridge conversations that he has with the young guy on the front desk. He's like, oh, I didn't know you were into music. And he's like, oh yeah, I love music. You know, he's like, you know, classic rock, like Wings. And then
Britpop, by like UB40.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
Def Leppard.
Did you get UB40 in Australia?
Yeah, we had UB40. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they feel like very particularly British.
Yeah. All covers, right? UB40? Red, Red Wine?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, because that was Neil Diamond, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. They're named after the form you had to sign to get unemployment benefits.
Really?
Because I think they were all unemployed when they started the band.
Yeah, right.
Or they were all on benefits when they were like trying to get the band going or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a common route. That was basically arts funding in the UK for a long time. Like the Dole was quite generous.
Yeah.
And so there were so many bands who became like big famous bands, big British cultural exports, who were just like, yeah, we were just on the Dole for years because like that was how you could survive and like make yeah. music. And then we were like, right, getting rid of that. We're not going to have any cultural production. I don't care that they paid back way more than that in tax when they got famous.
Yeah, that happened in, they did that in Australia too. It used to be very big that like, oh yeah, comedians would just be on the Dole in like the late 90s and the early 2000s. Like, yeah, they're just on the Dole and they're doing whatever. And then it's like, okay, well, no. Yeah. Don't do that.
That's what the D in AC/DC stands for.
Yeah.
Dole claimant.
Yeah. Yeah. UB40 in my mind, I guess is probably them covering Red, Red Wine makes me think of also, in my mind, they're linked with Simply Red.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Simply Red.
Yeah, Simply Red, quite a different energy.
Yeah, very different energy.
God, yeah, Mick Hocknell really, I used to go out with a girl who was into Simply Red and it was baffling. Because I've never met anyone under 50 who likes Simply Red apart from her.
I only really, like, in my mind, they're just like, they exist solely in ads from that time for their new CD.
Yeah.
They don't exist on any radio station. They don't exist on, like, a video, like, a music video show, nothing. It just exists solely as an ad for the new album coming out.
Simply Red in a magazine about that specifically. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, there were just, like, endless ads, or magazine pieces and stuff about how many women Mick Hucknall had sex with.
Really?
Like, breathless pieces about Mick Hucknall has bedded over 3,000 women, claims interview, or like whatever.
Golly.
Because, like, I mean, he's not an attractive man.
No.
He looks a bit like, I think, is it Rosie from Rosie and Jim? I don't know if this particular show.
I don't know, Rosie and Jim. Rosie and Jim.
I'm going to see if I can pull this
up.
I've
got UB40, but I don't have Rosie and Jim.
Yeah, there we go. Rosie and Jim.
yeah, okay.
They were two puppets who lived on a narrow boat.
Yeah.
It was like a children's show.
Yeah.
With this man who looks a bit like Harold Shipman. He does look a bit, he's an alarming man.
Yeah. It's always interesting when like that type of musician is just like, and they've bedded over 3,000 women. It's like, oh, yuck.
Yeah. Because also bedded is one of those verbs that's only ever used in newspapers.
Yeah.
You know, like when I love like shitty newspapers because like the journalists will just keep using synonyms for like 800 words and then it'll be like the svelte songstress, opined. Like these guys, they just start getting into like such niche.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, beautiful stuff. The craft of journalism. We respect it greatly. Someone had to find out how many women he'd bedded.
I mean, how could we not know? What, we go the rest of our lives not knowing? Jeez.
Exactly. No, women and plants, the two things you can bed. Yeah. Oh, you can bed men, actually, to be fair. Didn't want to impose my own perspective.
That was very Partridge, too.
Yeah. It has infected me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you can bed men as well, I suppose.
If you're so inclined. Yeah, there were some really great moments in this for just like the Partridge style of vernacular.
Yes.
Because we get him hosting the Swaffham County Fair in Norfolk. And this is like really beautiful where he's commentating on what's going on at the fair. And then he's like, the Clydesdale horse measured in hands, the traditional measurement of hands for a horse, because, of course, in the Middle Ages, if you'd you couldn't have a tape measure then. If you'd unfurled 14 feet of sheet metal from a small box, you'd be burned as a witch. Sad to see that, you know, girls as young as those girls over there would have been burned at the stake. May God have mercy on their souls.
I love a country fair. Love it. An agricultural fair.
Is this a big thing in Australia?
Yeah. There's big ones. There's big ones every, actually, I don't know when the Melbourne Fair is, but the Sydney one was a Royal Easter show. So over Easter, they'd have this big show. It was great.
Massive crucifix.
Yeah.
Put a guy in a wicker man, set fire to that.
It was actually, it would be a lot of like, it was a combination of, competitions for various sizes of vegetables that have been grown and also like, best chicken, but also stunt car race.
Best chicken.
Yeah.
Not like largest chicken, or just like we're just going to take a kind of stick a finger in the air and say which is the best one.
Best chicken.
All rounder.
A lot of wood chop competitions.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then also the stunt car racing, which was
a lot of wood
great.
In Australia. Hard to chop.
A lot of wood. A lot of wood. It was a very, at least somewhat royal show famous wood chopper. It was a Tasmanian man, big fella. He was always the best.
Two choppers from Tasmania. There you go.
A couple of choppers from Tasmania. And I know which one my favorite was. He took down the trees, not his own ears.
both pretty good with an axe, to be fair to them. I think in Britain, they're kind of like, you get more of the vegetable competition and more like maybe like a bit of maypole.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
a bit of maple, a bit of it. These are kind of
whimsical.
Like, you know, your tombola, your egg and spoon race.
Yes, right.
That kind of thing. It's kind of like a school sports day for adults a bit.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I remember my dad once when I was a kid took me to a steam rally.
What's that?
Like, it's not political. It's like a big field and they just have this like people who have like vintage steam engines. We'll just bring them and you can just go in the car. Which when you're five is sick. And now I'd be like, I'm concerned for these men. Yeah. And they are men.
Of course, they're men.
let's be honest here. Yeah. There's not a lot of women at a steam rally.
Yeah.
You know, the women at the steam rally typically wags. the wags of the steam men.
Yeah.
And I think I regard that as a compliment to women as a people, that they're not the chief demographic represented at the steam rally. I'm not sure you really want to be pulling at that thread. I think sometimes with feminism, there's probably a few battles you don't want to win.
Yeah.
And I think equal numbers at the glass, steam rally.
Yeah, the glass ceiling at the steam institute.
There's a glass ceiling and women are actually above it in this case. Then the men at the steam rally are below it. It's kind of a glass floor.
It's foggy from all the steam, that glass floor. But the women are above it.
They're just leading better lives. Yeah. They're, you know, blissfully unaware. We do love a country pursuit. I'm pleased that that's a common thread between our two peoples. That's always good to hear.
An agricultural people.
Yeah.
We love a giant pumpkin.
Ooh, giant pumpkin. That's right. It strikes me as Australia really doesn't have the climate for a pumpkin.
Yeah, we do.
Do you? Yeah.
You can grow pumpkins.
It's such a cold, wintry vegetable. I just struggle to... I mean, I guess you can grow anything.
You can grow anything.
It just feels like growing a pumpkin in Australia feels like growing a mango in like Lincolnshire. It just feels like I guess in theory you could do it.
We grew pumpkins in our backyard growing up in Sydney.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We had a pumpkin patch. Not award-winning, but they were definitely...
Not award-winning.
We'd held our own little fair, maybe we would have, but we didn't enter them in the big one.
Yeah, that's the trouble with it. There's not much of a grassroots pumpkin patch, competition. You know, you got to go pro or not, really.
It's actually a very funny thing to make people buy a ticket to and go and look at. I mean, it's part of an obviously a bigger experience, but one of the big things you can go and look at is like, look at that big pumpkin. You're like, and then the pumpkins are big.
Yeah,
these are bigger pumpkins
big.
Than you've ever seen in your life, so it's worth the look.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can get a pumpkin the size of like one of those, you know, one of those like little Tykes cars for children. Like,
bigger.
I don't know why that was my first thought. It's like a size
like
reference.
A kid driving around in a pumpkin.
Yeah.
It's because of the Cinderella story.
Yeah. Kind of like that worm from What Do People Do All Day?
Yeah.
Just in a big hollowed out pumpkin instead of an apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that could work. We get a bit where Alan Partridge, he like picks up a big onion and he's like, you could beat someone to death with this. He's like, and then you could eat the evidence. And then the guy who's like marking the clipboard for his ratings just like gives it nothing and he kind of like shrugs it off.
Yeah.
Which I related to Alan in this moment. Well, you're like, that's kind of funny. And then like no one's paying attention. You're like, okay, whatever.
I love that he's not interested in the cabbages.
Yeah.
No time for cabbages.
Walks past all of them. He's like, no, not doing it.
No time for him.
Refuses to engage with the concept that there even could be a best cabbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even best of a bad bunch. He's like, no, I'm not.
No.
Yeah. He's really not taking the gig seriously, I feel.
No. I would have.
Yeah.
I'd love that. I'd love the opportunity. Get me in there.
Yeah, I actually would as well. Judging a giant vegetable contest.
Yeah. These are the best ones.
The power would go to my head immediately.
Yeah.
I'd be like, make your case.
And it's like, can we eat these? Then just on shape.
Yeah.
You don't even get to taste. And it's like, oh, fair enough.
Yeah. I want a soup made from each of these pumpkins.
Yeah.
And then I'll decide.
And then I'll know. Then I'll really know.
Yeah. That would be good. But yeah, no, he doesn't do that.
No.
He over the microphone, he does a bunch of complaining about the BBC commissioning process. And then no one listens, so he just walks off.
Yep.
He screams, fire, fire, the fair's on fire, in the hope of getting a reaction.
Yeah.
And gets nothing.
That's the other, this is another great, we also have this one, the fire tent, where you can go and meet the fire department and get like a little magnet. I remember, I had a set.
A magnet. What better commemorative item for the fire department than a magnet?
They were always about collecting little bags of stuff from every exhibit. It'd be like, oh, cool, I got a little leaflet about the fire department.
Yeah.
And a magnet that says,
chip fat can kill.
Yeah. That's actually one of my best, my favorite ads that I've ever seen is in New Zealand. Yeah. They had a fire safety ad, which was sausages on the stove unattended, and then the curtain catches on fire, and then the house catches on fire. It's like, don't leave sausages unattended.
In any state, on the grill or otherwise, watch them like a hawk. Who knows what they're going to do?
But I'm just like, we don't have those ones. How often is that happening in New Zealand? It's like, we've just got to do some PSAs. We've really got to sort this issue out. This is dreadful.
I left my grill unattended. Yeah, terrible business. You don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, we used to have a lot. A lot of it here was like people falling asleep with a cigarette in their hand.
Yes, yes, kind of classic. Thing. There's also another one in New Zealand, which is about drinking. Don't drink too much. But it was an uncle at a party who gets really drunk. And then at one point, and like earlier in the evening, he's swinging like his niece around like an aeroplane in the backyard. And then later on does it once he's really drunk and swings her and she hits a bookshelf. And everyone's really upset with him. And this is a really serious ad. And he leaves and he's crying. He's very upset. And I mean, it's a horrible thing to watch, but it is such a strange.
It'd be funny if he just like threw her clear of the garden, just like a shot put, and they'd be like, "That was quite impressive, Craig. Like you really sent her." I mean, I hope she's okay.
She just takes off.
The first Kiwi in space, just hopefully.
But it is. It's like such a. It's a harrowing ad, but also at the same time, it's just like, man, how often is this happening? They're like, we've really got to tell uncles to stop drinking so much at parties and swinging kids around.
It's very specific.
It
feels like it was aimed at one individual. Like, oh, fucking Uncle Swinger.
Yeah.
Can't stand it. I mean, Uncle Swinger could be two different types of guy.
He's ruined a lot of birthdays by just getting in there and grabbing a kid and swinging them too hard into something.
It's also so funny because it's like, it's just an accident. Like, it's not like they're trying to be like, you know, the damage you're doing with your drinking problem. Yeah. It's like, he's like kind of drinking at a party, which is fine. Mm. And also swinging around a kid is fine. You probably shouldn't do it if you're too drunk to do it. But these are both things which are socially acceptable.
Yes.
And he just happens to have combined them in a way that's resulted in like a minor injury.
Yeah.
But they're all acting like he's like punched the kid.
Well, it's similar to drink driving in a way, I suppose. But they've just gone.
Don't drink and child.
Yeah, don't drink and swing a child around. I mean, it's good advice, but it is specific advice.
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably the same. He's left the stove on, sausages burning. He's gone into the living room to swing a kid around. It's the same guy.
Yeah,
I imagine it's the same guy in all
these.
He's left
the sausages on fire at home. He's drunk drove to the party to swing a child around. He's catching all kinds of.
Yeah. It's a harrowing tale.
Yeah, I mean, they love kind of like throwing a person in New Zealand, though. I remember there was there was the England rugby team years ago, or it might have been the British Lions, one of the two. They were on tour in New Zealand, and they got in trouble because there was like pictures of them throwing dwarves in a nightclub. There was some nightclub in New Zealand had an attraction where they had like a team of dwarves in like helmets so you could throw at like a sticky target.
Yeah.
And then they were in... And then the newspapers were like, England, because I think they were there with the All Blacks and they were like throwing these. And then it was sort of one of these bizarre kind of gray areas because no one quite knew what to make of it. It's like, well, it seems bad, but also like they are being paid. They've volunteered, I guess, but it seems odd. I don't know. I don't know really what the consent structure is in that scenario.
Yeah.
And then it was also just like seeing the pictures of just like, guy, like, you know, rugby forwards next to a dwarf is like, it's such a powerful contrast. Yeah. Like, they could throw me. Well, there's no need.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, exactly.
They could throw anyone in there.
Yeah. There are regular sized men in that room that you could throw. Yeah. Go for it.
So maybe New Zealand has a cultural problem with this. I don't
with
know.
Throwing.
Yeah.
Throwing your folks.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, he storms off to Southern Country Fair.
Yeah.
He goes in for his meeting with Chris Feather. We've previously had a little bit of a suggestion that Chris Feather likes the look of Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
So we turn up to the meeting. Chris Feather's talking about, he's kind of making sort of vague asides about Lynn being attractive. And he's like, well, you know, Lynn could go for a drink with you later if that'd help.
Yeah.
Alan just offering her up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get this fun moment where he's like, I'm not going to give you a 6-month contract, Alan. And Alan goes, you're just like the rest of them. And you sat on your fat pimply ass telling people what to do. And he's like, because I'm going to give you a 5-year contract. And he's like, sorry about what I said just then.
And again, Chris Feather, not bothered, really.
No. It's almost like he didn't hear it. He's just he's plowing on.
He was doing his bit. He had his, like, I'm not going to give you a 6-month contract. He had that in his mind already. It's like, I'm going to give you
the Chris Tarrant.
Yeah, yeah.
A beautiful move. And another man who's quite Partridge.
Yeah, Chris Tarrant.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Millionaire? Is that millionaire?
Yeah, who wants to be a millionaire? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I presume you had your own version.
We had our own. We had Eddie Maguire wants to be a millionaire.
Yeah. Did Eddie Maguire have any particular deal?
His whole deal was a massive twat.
Oh, okay.
he was the head of the Collingwood Football Club and hosted a footy show in Australia, and also for some point in time ran Channel 9 for a very brief period of time. He was in charge of, which is the network that had the footy show on it, and also Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He ran the network and was also hosting these shows at the same time.
That's baffling.
And I once saw him sitting in a car, and I made eye contact with him, and he wound his window up.
He was alarmed. He was like, I feel safe.
As he should be alarmed. Because I was like, did I take a photo? Because I can see him. But he's, just seems like a real prick of a guy, allegedly, according to me.
Allegedly a prick. I love the idea of like suing someone for calling you a prick. Like trying to attempt to prove in court that you're not a prick to like a legal standard.
Actually, I don't think he could.
You could call witnesses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to say it. Not allegedly. Yeah. Eddie Maguire is a prick. Let's go to court.
And I hope he's listening. I really do.
Yeah.
See you in court.
I'm sure you could find enough evidence to suggest that, in fact, he is a prick.
Yeah, I reckon that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because over here we had the big scandal with the coughing.
Mm.
Yeah, which was
crazy. I've seen the miniseries.
Oh, right. Yeah. I haven't watched the miniseries. I did see a documentary about it years ago. And I watched it live. I remember watching the episode with my parents. Yeah. I was just kind of old. I mean, how old would I have been? Maybe like 10 or something.
Yeah.
Like just at that age where you're old enough to understand stuff. I remember it. And, but it was like such a crazy cast of characters. Like the fact that there was a guy called Tekwin Whittock.
Yeah.
The involvement of a man called Tekwin Whittock will improve any story for me.
Yeah.
The coughing, the fact that he's like an army major, but he's an idiot, and they're in like loads of credit card debt, and just like the unraveling of it all. It felt like a TV drama. It didn't feel like a real thing that was happening. There's this amazing account on Twitter called Great British Getty Images, and they just repost like old Getty Images photos and like particularly stuff from like the 90s and 2000s. And they'll go in like themes. They'll do like a week of like footballers at nightclubs, or they'll do like whatever it is, or like celebrities doing charity events. And there was like some great ones of just like the major and his wife on the red carpet at events, like after they'd won and become famous, but before all of the sketch, which is quite a short, I reckon it was only like 3 months or something. And it was just, I love that shit. Just people, just like the most random people, and they're at the premiere of Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, so a big shout out to Major Charles Ingram and his wife. Hope they're doing well.
I hope they're doing well. I think they're robbed.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think if you manage to cheat that effectively that they aren't able to catch you actually while you're doing it, you should be able to keep the money.
It's pretend.
Exactly.
It's a TV game show. Give them the money. They win, they win. It's like that guy who beat the... What's the show... There's a show from the 70s where it's like Blammo or something.
Blammo.
I can't remember what it's called, but you got to stop the buzzer exact right moment and you can win cash. And he ends up winning it because he'd been watching it for so long that he realized that it wasn't random. It was just going, this little glowy box was bouncing around the screen in a particular pattern. And if you hit it at the exact right moment, you'd get the $1,000 every single time. And he made a fortune from it because he'd been studying it. It's like, well, that guy deserves our money.
Yeah.
You made a dumb game that was easily beaten.
Yeah. It's card counting.
Yeah.
It's legal.
Yeah. You're allowed to do it. You just don't like it because you don't want to pay the money.
Yeah. It's just playing the game well.
But you're a TV show, so grow up.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Sorry.
You've got to pay him the money.
You've got to pay him the money. So I'm on their side. Coughing or no coughing? I don't even care.
Oh, 100%. I remember we had this show on TV in like the early 2010s called The Million Pound Drop.
Yes.
Hosted by, I think, Davina McCall.
Yeah.
Britain's loudest woman. And it would just be like, it was like £1 million in like a thing. And then like they would have to put the £1 million over like different trapdoors, depending on what they thought the answer was. And they could spread it if they weren't sure.
Yep.
And then sometimes they weren't allowed to spread it. And there was like, apparently it was like episode one. There were this couple who had like 750 grand left after 10 questions. And they were like, fuck, that's like the entire budget for the rest of the season. Yeah. And apparently, like, they lost it all on like the final question, but apparently like all the producers were like shitting themselves. They're like, what are we gonna fucking do if they win this?
That's great.
Mad that they hadn't budgeted for that potentially happening.
Yeah, the money that they were, you know, gonna give away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because also then if someone does win that on the first episode, the ratings are gonna be crazy. So you'll be like, you can make the money back.
You can make the money back.
Yeah, but you gotta have it to hand.
Yes.
Anyway, those are just my tips for any TV producers out there. Just a thought, if you're doing a game show, just be prepared for people who know the system.
Yeah, just be prepared for somebody winning the prize that you've promised them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, consider that. Yeah. And similarly, if you work at a coconut shy, maybe make sure those are glued down.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I won't be shy about claiming my prize. Yeah.
So the fanciest carnies in the business, these people.
It's so awesome because it's like, who wants a coconut? Coconuts are so inexpensive, but also like the coconuts are glued down, and like, and you, so you can't win a coconut, but also you're paying to try and win a coconut, but also who wants a coconut?
Yeah,
it's a baffling stool.
Yeah,
yeah, they may as well be like turnips or something. It's like, yeah,
it's like all of those ones being like they're all tricks. And it's like, why don't you do the thing where like you're like, these prizes can't be that expensive.
No.
You know.
Yeah, just lower the standard of the prizes.
Rise the price of entry or lower the standard of the prizes. We'll still do it.
Yeah, cracker toys.
Yeah.
Get a little mirror or a little comb.
Yeah.
There you go. People love a comb.
Yeah. Get a ticket to do it. Go play another game. That's enough.
Yeah. There you go. That's fine. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on the log flume.
Yeah.
So then basically Chris Feather dies in the middle of signing the contract. My girlfriend gasped.
Really?
Yeah. Not seen it before. I was like, yeah, this is a. I think she was like really, you know, she was getting into it, like the arc of Alan. She was like, he's gonna be back on the BBC. She's like,
finally getting what he wants.
I know. Yeah. So never say that this show doesn't have drama.
Yeah.
And then he finishes signing the contract using Chris Feather's hand to do it. He's like, well, you've got your date wrong here. I'll just initial that. And then walks off. And then we get this last bit where he's having a get together for all the hotel staff.
Yeah.
And he's made party bags in the spare sanitary bags that he's got. And he's used like the hotel paper to make a like goodbye staff sign.
You got miniature Scotch eggs if you want one.
Exactly. Michael turns up in a silk Chinese shirt with a dragon on the back, which is so awesome.
Yeah.
And he talks about marrying a Filipino lassie, and he's like, oh yeah, well, you know, it didn't work out. You know, she couldn't deal with Newcastle, couldn't get used to the culture. She's like, she'd go back to the Philippines, and oh, she moved to Sunderland. Shacked up with my brother. beautiful little joke.
Yeah.
Couldn't have had on Newcastle, moved to Sunderland. Yeah, which is definitely a step down.
Mm.
No offense to the people of Sunderland, no. But probably receiving a bit of Newcastle propaganda here.
Mm.
But if, like, you're in Newcastle, people like warning you about Sunderland.
Yes.
They're like, don't.
I go to Sunderland.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, that's a real rivalry.
Yeah.
He gets into an argument with Michael, who's quite drunk, about the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre.
Yep.
Kevin Eldon is there. Michael yells at him and says, you've got a lot to learn. And then, we get Kevin Eldon gets thrown out first.
Yes.
For saying that there's too many blacks in Acton.
Yeah.
It was like the only thing he says the whole episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's this
person. Yeah, the anecdote about how he sells kitchens, but doesn't. I couldn't cook.
Yeah, which Michael finds hilarious.
Michael loves.
So hilarious that he repeats the entire anecdote.
Yeah.
Then he makes this racist remark, and then everyone, there's this beautiful moment where just like everyone gives him a shocked look, and then it just cuts to Alan kind of just like pushing him out of the room gently and going, yep. I just think well, people found what you said a bit racist. So anyway, here's your party bag.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And yeah, and then so then we get Michael and Alan get into this argument, and then Susan is like, "Mr. Partridge is still a guest at this hotel, and you've had too much to drink. Why don't you take yourself home?" And then the Sophie and the boy, whose name I always forget, are like, they're sort of sniggering. She's like, "I don't know what you two are laughing at. Get back to the front desk." And then he's like, "Oh, I don't know what her problem is."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "My problem's you, Alan." And then just goes in on him.
Yeah.
A lot of people have fond memories of this. It's like, you've been here for 182 days. I've had to put up with your shit. Checkout's at 12 noon tomorrow.
Yeah. Great.
And then we just get Lynn and Alan cleaning up the room to the soundtrack of Black Beauty.
Love this gag.
Yeah.
Love the I mean, great track.
Yeah. What a classic. What a banger.
What
when
a
that
banger.
Comes on in the club.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's going off.
Yeah, when Black Beauty soundtrack drops, like, oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. A film about a horse.
Yeah.
No need for a tape measure there.
No. How many hands? Don't know. Don't need to know.
Don't know.
Don't
how many
want
hands.
To know.
That's one of those movies that I feel like in the 90s everyone was going on about, and I've never seen it. Or it's completely faded from cultural relevance. It felt like something people would talk about, and then now no.
It felt like it was repeated on TV a lot, and also wasn't. Or I mean, maybe for somebody it was like, love it. I just remember it and being like, my feelings are feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I feel uncomfortable by this horse movie.
Yeah, I'm not keen on horses, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm like, if you're going to have a horse, then it better be talking. That's all I ask.
Okay, yeah.
If
yeah,
it's
yeah.
the lead character is the horse, I want it I want it talking.
Yeah, like the Trojan horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I definitely, yeah.
Murmuring.
Yeah, murmuring. There's something going on in there. I'm not sure what's...
Bit chatty at all.
Yeah, a little bit chatty. It's having a whole conversation with itself. It's very strange. Yeah, in Greek, bizarrely. I didn't know horses could speak that. Yeah, I don't know. There's those movies which, like, I find that fascinating when, like, a movie is, like, massive and then it fades from cultural relevance. Because, like, movies that weren't massive, you expect them to. And then some movies that are massive stick around, but then, like, something like Dances with Wolves. No one talks about Dances with Wolves anymore.
No.
And it was, like, the longest movie anyone had ever seen. Like, because it was, like, 3.5 hours or something. I mean, obviously, it was shorter than, like, Das Boot, but I don't think anyone actually watched that.
They've adapted.
And now every movie is that long.
Black Beauty. Why do I just got deja vu. Have we talked about Black Beauty before?
I don't think so.
They've made it 5 times.
5 times? It's like Rocky.
Yeah, there's been 5 adaptations of Black Beauty. There's one in... And how do we possibly...
There's one where he has to race the Russian super horse.
they make it... They must have just been making it... 1994, surely that's the one we know.
Yeah.
They made it. Australia made one. There was a miniseries. Hanna-Barbera made one.
Australia made one. It was censored.
Yeah, why did we make one?
Hanna-Barbera made one.
Oh, we must have made an animated one. There's some animated ones. There's live action ones. There's all sorts. It must be one of those, because it's an old book. They're like, yeah, people love Black Beauty. Let's
people
do it again.
They adore it.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. But there we go. Did we get anything at the end after the party?
No, he's just, they're packing up over the credits.
Yeah.
And while then we get Black Beauty soundtrack plays.
Yeah, we get a bit of, like, him intermeshed with it's like him running through a field of wheat, him gyrating in his thong.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we also do get a fun little bit where, he comes back into the room after showing Kevin Eldon out, and they're all looking in his drawer, and they all, like, spring away from the drawer.
Yep.
There's some great physical comedy throughout with the drawer. There's a bit where he, like, dives like a goalkeeper across the room to close it before Sophie looks in it.
Great dive.
Yeah.
And then she just looks at it anyway.
Yeah. I have a real commitment for that level. Like, that must have hurt.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, this needs to look great.
It's a good dive.
Yeah, great dive. But yeah, then she starts singing this kind of, like, Scottish, like, folk song.
Yeah.
He's off to the BBC, even though the lyrics change. It's very... Yeah, Lynn in a Panic is always fun. That's season one.
It's season one wrapped up.
Yeah, we've got the you know, the terrors and iniquities of season two to come. But I think season two is kind of like, it's where it starts.
How far in the future are we talking? Season two year wise?
2002, so it's 5 years.
5 years. Yeah, right. Great.
Things have moved on. Alan Partridge is living in a static caravan.
Really?
He's building a house. He's got a Ukrainian girlfriend.
My gosh.
The Ukrainian girlfriend is a phenomenal character. It's so great. Yeah. I think we've got some fun in store. So
great.
Tune in. This is a Patreon episode, so if you're listening to this, thank you very much for being a subscriber. You're the best. You keep this, you pay Pete's wages. at the end of the day.
Thank you. Very much appreciated.
Exactly. Yeah. We're keeping him in tins of beans and train tickets to Long Eaton. So,
yeah,
do bear that in mind. So please continue to do so. There's going to be some more bonus content coming out. Like we've got a What's the Deal with November and Devon coming out. So do enjoy that. And as ever, you can check out Ooh Spooky.
Yes.
This podcast with Luca Miller, also a friend of the show.
Yes. Three O's and an H.
Three O's and an H. And on that bombshell. See you next week. All right. Bye.